glad you could all be here today. You've had so many days off. What I understand from the information that I've been given is that the expectation we had today that we were going to be able to move House Bill 3575 has been delayed, and that we in fact will not be able to move the bill today, but we can talk about where we are in the negotiations and the status of the bill. So what I believe we'll do is have Dick update us on the bill as the latest amendments occur. Maybe you can also then talk about what the sticking points remaining are, and where we go from here. So at this point, I'll open a work session on House Bill 3575, and Dick, would you give us an update, please?
You have three things that I provided for you this morning. The first is the staff measure summary, which is sort of a written description of, it says a dash 5 at the top, but it's really the dash 4 amendments. Dash 5 just came out this morning, and they weren't not quite what I expected, so the description is improperly marked in that sense. And then I've done sort of a section-by-section analysis here, which reduces your 62-page bill to 4 pages. And, you know, I hope that will help you. In a sense, you need to go back to each section and look at the bill when you have questions, but at least it can point you in the right direction. And the last is sort of the summary page from the model that I'm using to sort of estimate the revenue impact from the changes as they're proposed, at least in the dash 4 amendments. Again, the top that should read the dash 5, but the dash 4 amendments.
Dick, I have a copy of dash 3s we got at the last meeting, and then the dash 5s. What is, are the dash 4s like this?
I thought you had a copy of the dash 4s.
Does everybody have a copy of the dash 4s?
No, Mr. Chairman. I have a big, thick copy of the dash 2s and a big, thick copy of the dash 3s.
That's what I have.
Okay.
As well.
I'll get you the dash 4s because they are very similar to the dash 3s.
Okay.
Well, the dash 5s are simply amendments to the dash 4 amendments.
Oh, okay.
So they're much thinner.
Okay. Do I throw away the dash 2s at this point in program? Or?
I think, yes.
Okay. Well, if we can make sure that all the members get a copy of the dash 4s today.
I suspect they're down there working on them now if they can find my other copy.
Okay.
Now, what would you like to do? We can go through this section by section.
Well, last time we went through this summary of the bill, and that actually I think was very helpful in preparation for moving the bill, I hope, tomorrow. I think it would be instructive to just go through it section by section, not necessarily every subsection, but just by the total amounts of the sections.
Starting then with the section-by-section summary, what I've done there in two columns is to indicate where there's the same changes apply to both eastern and western Oregon.
Okay.
So like section 2 is the main section which sets up the ongoing program, new program in the west, and that section is duplicated in section 35 for the east side.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're starting with is defining a new program, essentially, and initially it requires the Department of Revenue to identify forest land that is in ownership of 5,000 or more acres,
okay.
And they have to do that by January 1 of 2000. And then they certify those properties to the assessors so that the assessors can change the way in which they put those properties on the tax roll. So it starts out by defining SAV, which is specially assessed value. Okay, I'm sorry, there's a lot of acronyms in here. But, anyway, at 75% of the values that are currently in statute as they're indexed by the current log purchase value index, which is in statute. So you have that procedure already in statute, which defines specially assessed value, and this limits the for properties in this new program to 75% of that value. And then for ongoing purposes, it sets up the maximum assessed value, same way it is for all other properties. It can grow at only 3% per year. And then what the assessor actually puts on the tax roll, assessed value, is limited to the smaller of specially assessed value or maximum assessed value, and then further limited to real market value. It defines common ownership for the purposes of this determination of whether you're in a group, whether the land is in a ownership of 5,000 acres or more. That's been going through sort of an growth period, if you like. I think with the forest industry trying to sort of not force people in who don't want to go in, and the Department of Revenue trying to find a definition which is administratively feasible. So it's come down basically now to a person that owns the land or is a majority owner in a corporation, partnership, or other entity which owns the land. Now,
let me just ask you a question here as you go through the rest of this. Are these the points upon which there is agreement?
Yes. That might be worthwhile. At this point, I guess the areas where there are concern or discussion is going on primarily relate to the rate of the severance tax and whether it will be imposed for 2 or 3 years.
Right.
Okay. So the rest of the program, I think, is
pretty well
to that.
Okay. Yeah. Including DOR as far as the timing on the figuring out its 5,000 acre ownership by January 2000, you can do that.
Okay, then the maximum assessed value is also defined. The next section there, 3-2, let me make a comment I was going to make introductorily. The way I set this up is the dark lines in each section underline the application date. So for all of these sections above that first dark line, the application date is specified down there, so you can see when these sections take effect. So for that first period there, you've also defined maximum assessed value. You need a starting point for maximum assessed value. You said it's going to can only increase 3% per year, but it has to have some value from which it increases 3%. So you set that up in the first year there as 75% of the specially assessed value, again, the statutory value that is indexed, for 1995. You reduce that by 10% and increase it 3% a year for 3 years. Okay. The way the bill operates now, you're dealing with, you know, a constitutional amendment which establishes maximum assessed value. And so your ability to change that is somewhat limited. And the way the bill operates is to disqualify everything for special assessment. And then under the Constitution, you're allowed to change the maximum assessed value. So you have continually through here disqualification of these properties from special assessment. And then, the provision that no penalty is imposed for that disqualification. You know, normally, if you move out of forest land, say, into homesite or something, you have to pay taxes that you would have paid if it were assessed as a homesite in the prior 5 years. You have to pay those differences as an additional tax or penalty. Those are not imposed. And also, the assessor is required, in general, when there's a disqualification, to notify the taxpayer that the property is being the way in which it's classified is being changed. So these notice requirements are also waived.
Okay. We've got some dash fours for a different bill. So, he's really going to apply to this call.
But speaking of GST.
Yeah, that's where we were this morning.
This is a fine bill. Looking forward to the study group.
In the section then 5 and 38, what you're doing is allowing an election for small owners. You've got the large owners are automatically in this new program, and small owners then have an election to be assessed under this, under section 2 and 35, and the period for which they can make that election is from the effective date of the Act through April 1 of 2001. And I've said they do that by application. It's not really an application process. They just simply notify the department that they're making that election on forms provided by the department. And then section 5.3 there is limiting the assessment under section 2 for these properties that are electing in to just 2 years, 2001 fiscal year, and then 2001-2002. And I said C9.1 below there because the way this is set up is at the end of 2002, these properties are automatically forced into the special, to the new program. And they have an election to get out. But, so at this point in time, you're just putting them in for 2 years. You can't find it. They're in my office somewhere. Oh, no.
Maybe Dexter could print out a new copy.
Okay, then if you move down below the first dark line into the second section, you've got an application date, which is 2002. So what you're doing really is setting up the program again after the phase-in period. You set it up already at the start of the phase-in period. And so you're setting it up again after the phase-in period. So you redefine the specially assessed value not as 75, but as 100% of the index statutory values. And you also redefine maximum assessed value as 100% rather than 75% of the statutory value for 95 adjusted. And then in the next section down, 9 and 10, you're dealing with a small owner election in 2000. And what you do, first of all, is disqualify all small ownerships from the current method of assessment and force them into this new program unless they make an election to stay in something which may exist at that time as an alternative. And that's part of the bill here is to require the department to do a study to provide a deferred property tax alternative for small owners. So they'll have an option at that time to elect in whatever the next legislature establishes as an alternative program. Excuse me. And it specifies, the dates by which those elections must be made. You'll note that that is set up now so that they have to apply in April of the year, first year in which they're going to elect out of the new program into what the alternative, whatever it is. And there's no limit on that. So that goes on essentially in perpetuity so that the opportunity to move out of the new program and into whatever alternative is established is a continuing opportunity, but would only apply for people who had less than 5,000 acres
mm-hmm.
or whose land was in ownership of less than 5,000 acres. Now, if you do make that election, the question is, are you, in making that election, you would presumably be making yourself, subjecting yourself to the harvest tax. So the question is, when does the harvest tax apply, the privilege tax? And that's in whatever calendar year you make the election. So if you elected in April of 2010 or whenever, for that calendar year 2000, any harvest would be subject to whatever severance tax is imposed at that time, which, you know, would expect to be the 3.2%, you know, on the west side, 1.8% on the east side. Then you deal at this point with some provisions here for properties which exchange hands. If a person who's in the program acquires land from which is in the small ownership program, then that land which was in the small ownership program is automatically transferred into the new program. Mm-hmm. I've asked the department to look at this. I think these same types of provisions should actually start in 2000 because that's when these lands can start changing hands, and we should be specifying what happens then. But that's something we still need to look at a little bit. Okay, moving down into the last section then on the first page, we start dealing with the question of how you index forest land and what values you use when harvests occur for the timber that's being harvested. And this substitutes two new indexes. We currently are using an index of immediate harvest value on the east side, and on the west side, either stumpage value, if there are sales enough to indicate what those values are, or values from the log purchase value index. And this substitutes two new indexes, and, you know, read those because from now on they're acronyms, and they get kind of long. The average Pacific Northwest Coast lumber, and the P disappeared, price index on the west side, and on the east side you're using a Northwest Inland rather than a Coast Lumber Price Index. And you get rid of a lot of terms in this case. You no longer need to deal with inadequate sales data because you're not using stumpage values anymore, and you don't need the log purchase value index or stumpage value or the average Western Oregon log value definitions because you're switching to these new indexes. And that all starts in January of 2001. Those are the new indexes and those are definitions. The next section at the top of the second page has to do with the procedure of indexing. And it's, you know, replacing a new value index term for what's currently in law as the forest land index and replacing the average Pacific Northwest Inland Price Index or the Coast Price Index or whatever index is currently used. Then, again, it's dealing with maximum assessed value, but at that point, all it's doing is clarifying that that applies to those ownerships that are still in the current program, the 80-20 program, as we've called it. It freezes the current indexing procedure by, you know, referencing the 1997 edition of the statute through June 30th of 2001. And then for 2001, 2002, and after, it defines specially assessed value as the specially assessed value in the prior year times this new value index. So you're changing the way in which you index the statutory values. And it provides there at the end for doing that calculation, even though you don't use the index for 2000, 2001, because that establishes the new base from which you measure growth from then on. Now the next section, 17 and 49, deal essentially with House Bill 2452 issues. They deal with it in a different way than you did in 2452. What they do is to put into the sections which exempt certain types of property from the privilege taxes, harvest from land assessed at real market value or assessed as farmland. So if it's not assessed as forest land, it would not be subject to the privilege taxes. And it says, you know, if you apply for assessment for as real market value or as farmland, and you don't meet those tests, then you are assessed as forest land, and you would be if you don't elect into the new program, you'd be subject to the harvest taxes. As near as I can tell, 19 and 51 just kind of clean up, again, relating to 2452 issues, some sections in there which say that forest land can be assessed at real market value under Section 308, and this says, no, don't do that anymore. The forest land is assessed according to how forest land is assessed. Now, in the next section, I put in the rates which were sort of tentatively agreed to, I thought, yesterday, but we have some amendments before us, and that issue is still being discussed. But what it does is limit, essentially, the current rates of 3.2 in the west, 1.8 in the east, to harvest from lands which are not assessed under Section 2 under this new program. And it sets the rate at blank, essentially, or some rate for two calendar years, 2000 and 2001, and this is where the discussion is taking place now. And then exempts forest harvest from forest land which are in the new program after calendar year 2002. The next section then deals with how you determine the harvest values once there is a harvest. And if it's subject to the privilege tax, what's the value of that harvest? And you're replacing essentially stumpage value with immediate harvest value. And I can't tell you the difference between the two, really. They're both aiming, as near as I can tell, at the market value of the product which is being cut and harvested. You might want either the industry or the department to talk about that. I've read them both and they look the same to me. I think it's a difference in how you measure them. Currently, the department on the west side sets up a number of areas in which it values forest land, and you have, again, valuation by site class from FA through FF. This does away, essentially, with a lot of the classifications and requires the department to determine immediate harvest value. And to select new harvest areas in which you determine that value. And this will be part of, of another study the department is required to do. Then the Section 27 at the bottom of that section has to do with certain reports that the industry has to make at this time. If you're purchasing logs, you have to make your books available, first of all, to the department. And secondly, you have to provide certain reports. And also, if you're selling logs, you have to do that. And it does away with those reports. You're no longer doing a log purchase value index. You don't need that information. Okay, top of page 3, then, we start talking about distribution a little bit of the monies that are collected and that are currently in the Western Oregon Timber Tax account, the Western Oregon Timber Tax Reserve account, and which are currently held by Eastern Oregon County Treasurers as kind of a reserve on the east side, even though there isn't a special account set up. First of all, you're amending the portion that deals with distribution there. It says, first of all, the money goes into one of the accounts, the Western or Eastern Oregon Timber Tax account. Money from that account can be expended for certain purposes, i.e. refunds, if it's determined that a tax was improperly assessed. Secondly, to cover the expenses of administering these programs. And that's broadened a little bit to say other expenses associated with forest taxation. And the reason for that is to get the cost of these studies that the bill is to allow the expenses of the studies that the bill requires to be paid for out of those funds. It deletes the current methods of distributing and says
basically that of the new monies that of the monies that come in from the privilege taxes, 65% of those which are coming in under the current 80-20 program will be distributed. 63% to 65% are distributed as follows. Yeah, 93% go into the state school fund and 7% into the community college support fund. I just multiplied those out in the staff measure summary. If you're reading that, 93% of 65% comes out to be 60.45%. So you've got 60.45% of the privilege tax going into the state school fund and 4.55% going into the community college support fund. And the balance then, 35%, is distributed to the county, the counties, just county government. Under current law, it goes back to all districts. Then that's the revenue that comes in from the lands, which will be on a continuing basis subject to the privilege tax. Now, any balance which would be the tax, the privilege tax is paid during the phase-in period from the lands that are in the new program would be distributed in the same way, essentially, the 93% to the state school fund and 7% to the community college fund. Now, where the distributions are based are to the counties. Right now, you have on the west side a system which requires a very complicated system. This is one of the things that's nice, which should we get rid of all this. You have to have a 5-year moving average of forest land value and a 5-year moving average of harvest values in each code area, essentially, throughout Western Oregon. And based on those, the monies are distributed back to all of these districts. And what this says is if you just take the forest land value in each county relative to the total forest land value in either Western or Oregon, Eastern Oregon, and that percentage is how the money goes back. You only need to know what forest land value is.
And how do the special districts and cities and all that feel about that county distribution?
They seem to be on board. The main thing that's happening, I think, is that the loss of severance tax revenues to them is being compensated because in current law, it's offset against their levy anyway. So when it goes away, the billing rate will rise up to the permanent rate. And so the loss of severance tax revenue is shifted in terms of property tax paid by other taxpayers. Secondly, to get an increase in the actual value of forest land on the roll. Mm-hmm. It's gone at 20% now, and it's going to 100%.
Okay.
So they're not only compensated for the loss in privilege tax. Yeah, I knew they'd find it. they get additional revenues from the expanded assessed value base. Now, the last sections there, 29 and 55, deal with monies that are currently on reserve. Let's just talk about what's happening to the distribution system. Essentially, through the end of, through June 30th of 2000, and the last distribution there is the May 2000 distribution. You simply follow current law. And once you cross over that boundary into July of 2000, you don't make any more distributions for that fiscal year, which would be 2000-2001, from either of the timber tax accounts. But you do make a distribution from the reserves. So the districts get some revenue in that fiscal year. You have under current, again, this is a simplification of the current system. You have sort of a prospective system of distribution now. The department has to make an estimate of how much the districts are going to get in the
coming fiscal year, that becomes the amount that the assessors offset against their levy, and those distributions then are made throughout the year. And when you get to May, the department has to use the reserve fund on the west side to make sure that the districts get exactly what was offset against them. Or if they've gotten too much money, the treasurer, the county treasurers hold that money and don't distribute it, so the districts get back exactly what the department estimated as to be their offset. This change is now to be a after-the-fact distribution. So you've got one fiscal year there where you're allowed to accumulate the money, and then you start making distributions the next year based on what you actually receive. So there's no more guessing. And you know the exact amount of the offsets where they're going back to the county. And there are offsets for what they actually get, not what the department thinks they're going to get. So that's what this procedure is trying to set up. And the 813 there, or 831, is August 31, is, you know, long enough after the end of the prior fiscal year to determine what money's available.
13 is 31.
August 31.
Is that where you're looking?
Yes.
Okay.
Good thing I don't have to make a living as a typist.
Maybe that was Friday the 13th.
So anyway, on the west side, August 13th, the 31st, the make sure I know where I am here for a second. Okay, we're still talking here about the ongoing program. We haven't gotten to the reserve accounts yet. So we're talking each year now, once this is an ongoing program, by August 31st, the department knows how much money was actually received from privilege taxes during the year, and they remit the portion that goes to the counties. The county assessors offset that against their levy for the upcoming year. And at that same date, whatever money is due the general fund is simply sent into the general fund. Then the offset procedure is defined in the next section there, 30, in the middle of the page. And it's, you know, basically cleaning up, getting rid of a lot of current law because you don't have this prospect of determination and certification and so on. Then as we move into the transition transition to after-the-fact distribution. this is sort of the process I was just discussing. It describes the current system and then the fact that for the year 2000, you do not make any distributions from either of the tax accounts. But the money that's in the reserve account, WOTTRA is the Western Oregon Timber Tax Reserve Account, is distributed. Again, it's based on forest land value. And you're retaining a reserve in that account to cover the expenses, and the bill later on actually appropriates $360,000 to the department for these purposes. Now, on the east side, the distribution, again, the way that process works is the offset is certified as one half of whatever the treasurer has on hand plus half of the prior year's revenue.
Okay.
So there's always money that the treasurer has over there that he's not distributing, and that sort of acts like a reserve account. And what this says is in 2000, whatever you've got on hand, you distribute. Okay. So that's gone. And then they move into the same sort of program, which is after the fact, and accumulate the revenues as the department distributes them to the county treasurers. And then at the, well, actually the department would not be making the distribution until August, after the end of the fiscal year, and then that distribution goes directly to the county. So the treasurers are taken out of the loop. They distribute everything on deposit, and they don't get, they don't have the problem of identifying those distributions in terms of which districts they go to and keeping track of them. The money just goes to county government. Again, one of the things that eliminates distributions on the east side are currently made based on the 1964 value of actual standing timber. So you go back and you figure out, you know, what the property tax would have raised had it been assessed against those values. And then you figure out the portion of that in each district, or each code area. And then you use that proportion to allocate the privileged tax monies that are available. So this gets rid of all of that procedure, finally. Again, the same distribution from the Western Oregon Timber Tax Reserve account, 93% goes to the state school fund and 7% to the community college support fund. Moving down to the bottom of the page, then, are the interim studies that are required. The Department of Revenue is required to convene a group to review and recommend forest land values back to the Legislative Assembly before the next session. And it describes how that group is supposed to be put together. You can look in Section 59 for that. And it also says if this group, which is convened, does not succeed in coming up with values, that they have to go through an alternative dispute resolution process. And it says that expenses, again, of this process, including the alternative dispute resolution, are expenses of administering forest programs. That allows those expenses to be paid out of the Western Oregon Timber Tax account. And it appropriates, as I said, $360,000 to the department for these types of costs. It also requires the Department of Revenue to convene a group to recommend a small ownership alternative deferred tax option. And again, this, as I said, the option, the bill allows small owners who are automatically pushed into the new program on July 1 of 2002, it allows them an option to elect to be taxed under an alternative program. And what that is will be, you know, whatever the next legislature enacts, and presumably what you'll have as sort of information in designing, available in designing that election is whatever comes out of the study group. There's a third group which the department has to convene. And right now there are some problems that exist in terms of real market values being sort of close, I guess, to maximum assessed values, so that you have an opportunity, in a sense, for every single forest land owner throughout the state to appeal the real market value of their forest land. And so you're asking the department to convene a group to figure out a system where you can centralize those or in some way make appeals of forest land real market value or a manageable appeal system. So that should be back to you again by the next legislative session. The rest of it is mostly cleanup provisions. You're deleting the Western Oregon Timber Tax Reserve account because you spent all the money. frequently substituting stumpy or immediate harvest value for stumpage value. You do have at the bottom of the page a number of sections which are repealed. And in Section 83, the second group there, again, some things I've asked, I don't see Bill Penhall asked them to look at it, but I'm not sure. These change the way in which you compute the local bonding limits for local government. Currently, you've got assessed value, you know, counties may be subject to bonding limits of 1% of assessed value. Well, what's assessed value? Well, it's the assessed value of the property on the roll, but you also add to that the equivalent value of the privilege taxes that they're receiving. Now, the privilege taxes are largely going away, but not totally going away. And so these sections are repealed, and that would no longer be added at all. And so I think it probably doesn't make much difference, but need to have local government look at that question, whether anybody is actually impacted by that change.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh.
Any
questions?
got it all? Let me quickly just, you also got the Dash 5 amendments today. Just quickly show you what is in sort of envisioned there. And basically what you're doing in the bill, as I went through it, there's one section which changes the rate for the privilege tax for a phase-in period for 2 years. What this does would allow you to have, well, first of all, it makes it a 3-year phase-in period. And secondly, it would allow you to have a different rate in each of those phase-in periods. Again, this is just, that's all this does. And that's basically, you know, a point of discussion at this point.
Right now, hopefully, I thought we were going to have this today, but we're not. But the disagreement is over a 2-year or a 3-year phase-in, is that correct?
Yes.
And depending on the length of time, that will determine what the rate is.
Yes.
So tomorrow when we get the... are we are able to move the bill? Will we have numbers in these slots, or will we have to?
You will have numbers if the agreement is reached.
Right. I think it's time to reach agreement. We've gone from 10 years to 3 years, from 2 years to 3 years. We've delayed this for a couple of weeks now.
If I may, Mr. Chair, I'd like to also go through the summary here of the actual revenue model that estimates that. Let's just sort of look broadly at the page to begin with. If you divide it horizontally, at the top you have the totals, and then in the middle the distribution to schools and the impact on school property taxes, and then the non-school districts at the bottom. And as you move across, the first box is current law. The next box is what happens to privilege taxes under the bill. And the third box is what happens to property taxes under the bill. And then the last box is kind of the net effect of all the changes. If you look in the first vertical box there for current law, what you have is my forecast of what privilege taxes, what total privilege taxes would be for both Eastern and Western Oregon. And then these are distributed out either to school districts or non-school districts. And the bold numbers there are the percentages I've used to distribute that. Now, one important thing you see happening, I talked about that 5-year average, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
Well, historically, what's in that for 3 or 4 years now are the old district tax rates, which were like $20 or something for school districts. And so about where those years are in effect, their effect on it would be to make 85% of the money go to schools because the school rates are very high. Each year as the new permanent rates are computed, they move into this average, and they're more like 70% going to school. So that average is dropping over time. But what that does is distribute more money to non-school districts, more of the privilege tax money over time. Now, the privilege tax money is not offset against school districts, so it doesn't have any effect on their tax rate. But the severance tax money that's going to non-school districts is an offset, And the increasing amount there has the effect of driving the billing rate down. Okay. And that's important when I try to compare current law with what happens now under this bill, because the severance taxes go away. And so I have to compare that reduced billing rate with the permanent rate, essentially, after the severance taxes are gone. Okay. If you, look at the second box there, the broadest one, in the middle of the page, let's look again at the top. Above the box are a bunch of percentages there, and these are sort of decision factors that have to be made. And I put in what you might say some placeholders essentially there, because I don't have much basis, and I don't spend too much time out in the forest for knowing what these are. But, you know, basically you're saying how much of the harvest will come from properties which are in the 5,000, which are over 5,000 ownership. And then the next two are the groups that would be small ownership. How many are going to elect to move into the program and how many are going to stay out? And the last one then is the 2452 effect. How many properties that are harvesting would now be not classed as forest land and therefore exempt from a privilege tax. And so what I did yesterday is, you know, basically I think the industry and the department have accepted the model that I put together for estimating this. And so I said, okay, you're the people that have some understanding of this industry. Go sit down and figure out what these percentages should be. And these are essentially what came back from an agreement in, with OFIC and the department. And the difference, I just had one row of numbers there. The difference here, the second set of numbers, says that, let's talk about the option first, the small owners. In the first 2 years, they have to opt out of the program. They have to make a positive statement to get into the new program. After 2 years, they're automatically plunked into the new program, and they have to take an active election to get back into the old program or whatever alternative is available at that time. So the percentages then change at that time. We're saying, first of all, not many people are going to move into the program, are going to actually make that election. But secondly, once they're all plunked into the program, not many are going to elect to get out. And that's just, you know, what they agreed to. And those numbers deal with the privilege tax. If you move over to the next box, the two numbers, again, percentages, are the acres of forest land which will move. They're not necessarily the same. Presumably, you know, as I think about it, at least as an economist, I would expect those who are near harvest to move in to avoid the privilege tax. But those that are not harvesting or for whom harvest is a long ways away, you know, they would stay out. So you'll have more acres staying out of the program than you will harvest. But anyway, those are the numbers that are sort of been agreed to by the group. If you do have those numbers, then you have a portion of the harvest. The current harvest doesn't change, and the tax of 3.2% applies only if you're staying in the current 80-20 program. The portion of the harvest, if you're in a 5,000-plus ownership or if you opt into the new program, the tax rate in these calculations falls to 2.3% on the west side and 1.3% on the east side. And so those are the resulting severance taxes that would be generated from those groups. You look at the total, and that's the sum. You can see what's happening. For the current year, they're both the same, of course, because the program doesn't take effect. Most effect in 99-2000, you get two effects. One, harvest from non-forest land dropping out. And secondly, the lower rates applying for the, they apply on a calendar year basis, so they start in the middle of that fiscal year. But anyway, you can see that the privilege tax will drop from $33 million to about $800,000 over that period. What happens to schools then if you move down into the next category, you can see that the taxes are dropping from 22 to, you know, half a million, 22 million to half a million. And again, with respect to non-schools, they're dropping from 6 million to 286,000. Okay, if we move into the next box, then we're talking about property tax and what happens to property tax. Now, I have to deal here with all, not just forest land value, but the total value on the roll because these billing rates change. And those billing rates affect all property, not just forest land property. So you've got two things going on here. One, the value of forest land on the tax roll is increasing as it moves into this new program. And if it stays in the old program, it's assessed at 20%. If it moves into the new program, it's assessed at 75% for 2 years, and then it goes to 100%. Again, you see what happens over the period. All of these assume about 3%, well, they assume exactly 3% growth in assessed value over this period. So you'd have, under current law, property taxes going up from, and property tax rates, permanent rates remain the same, from $2.8 billion up to $3.4 billion, essentially. And then under the program, they would go up more for both of those reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see a net increase of about 28 million dollars by the end of this period in property taxes paid. And you can see again how that impacts schools and non-school districts. In the school area, the only thing you have happening there is the increase in forest land values because the billing rate is the permanent rate. It doesn't change because there's no offset provisions. So you see an increase there. Which reflects the increase in the forest land value. If you move down into the all other districts, then you see the property tax going up substantially more by $17.5 million by the end of this year. And they lose about $9 million in severance tax, gain about $17 million in property taxes, so that by the end of that period, a net gain of about $8 million. So the reason I said we'll have rates is, you know, basically the areas that are open to discussion are simply variables in this model. And we can, once agreement is arranged, hopefully agreed to, we can get the revenue estimates out there that.
Okay. Any questions on the numbers? Yeah. For change?
I have some questions, but I'll talk about later. I don't understand it, so I don't want to bore everybody else.
Okay.
Just picture, I'm waiting to use Representative Montgomery's line tomorrow. Everybody in agreement with this? Why don't we just vote on it?
Well, everybody's in agreement on virtually everything except for these blanks right here. That's why we're unable to proceed today. But tomorrow is Friday, end of the week, and it's the day to move. Yeah.
The consequence, what's at stake between 2 years and 3 years? What's the difference?
Mr. Chairman, if I could add to the representative's question, but that would really help me, Dick, if you could, in the most plain means possible, explain to me what the fiscal impact or the revenue impact of the dollar choice is on this phase-in.
We're the winners on this.
Yeah, I don't think I really want to. You know, I've been sort of a party to those agreements, but I don't feel I can sort of talk about the discussions that are going on. I mean, you can bring the industry up and ask them.
Let's do that. And you guys, anybody want about the market condition between 8 years and 3 years?
Good morning. I'm Ray Wilkerson, Oregon Forest Industries Council. The discussions we've had with the governor's office primarily revolve around the question of how much the revenue impact would occur in the second biennium, the 01-03 biennium. and there's a number that's been discussed is what's tolerable to the governor. Depending on how you fill in the blank, either way would achieve that objective. So it's a matter of administration more than it is winners and losers or fiscal impact.
Can I ask you a question?
No.
No, not really, but I can do it outside the hearing room.
Well, no, that's better. That's a good question. I think if I understand what the issue is, a two-year phase-in, I think the concern is that a three-year phase-in gives you one more year to capture revenue that would not be collected otherwise.
Right.
Right. It holds the revenue stream a little higher for one more year than it does if you go with the 2 years.
That's a good question to me.
I can, address that question. If you do it in 2 years, you essentially have to sort of create a surplus in the first biennium, which fills a larger than acceptable reduction in the second year. You can avoid that problem by using 3 years.
Mr.
Chair,
just an observation, not a solution, but I think one thing to keep in mind as we talk about the phase-in is that this bill addresses an inequity that really is a consequence of ballot measure 50 as much as anything. And so when we're talking about 2 years or 3 years, we're talking about prospective, but I think we also have to keep in mind that we've had some years already under the belt since the effective date of measure 50. And so I think we need to keep that in consideration of when we're talking length of time for the phase in here.
And maintaining a tax system that, in terms of policy, we decided we don't want to continue anymore.
Right.
So why continue it?
Right.
Well, are we going to have a bill to move tomorrow, do you think, Ray?
Mr. Chairman, I think so. I certainly would hope so. The director of the Revenue Department has been gone this week. She's back today, and I think she needs to be kind of brought up to speed and become current on what's being discussed, and that will occur today, and I assume that she'll be here tomorrow and can help bring the committee up to date. But I think the key is the revenue impact over a four-year period, really, 99.01, 99.01, 99.03, and there is a number that's agreeable to everybody, so we're kind of working backwards from that number to figure out, the most efficient and sensible way of having that effect over that period.
Well, I know you're anxious. We're all anxious to have this resolved, and we'd certainly prefer that it not drag out any longer.
Yep. Mr. Sherman, I'm not sure I can sit through one of Dick's six extra. I'm not signed, so.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for coming up. Is there anybody else in the room here who wants to weigh in on the bill or give us some information that we haven't received already this morning? Okay. Thank you, Dick. Thanks for your analysis. We're not going to deal with 595 today. That's going to be coming up on Tuesday next week. So there is no further business today. We will meet at 8:15 tomorrow, and I hope we'll have final amendments and move this bill. And I'll also let you all know that the Revenue Committee party that was scheduled for Monday the 14th has been moved at Representative Kefouri's request. Insisted on it. So we're going to move it to the following Monday, the 21st.
Where is that?
Willamette Valley Vineyards.
Mr. Chair, I think that has something to do with Representative Kefouri's stature. I seem to just declare my name here. I seem to recall that the chair was not unhappy with that request.
So. I'm just trying to think. There's so many social events going on. It's just terribly difficult to squeeze this into the calendar. Okay, thank you. We'll adjourn for today.
Social life.